Okay, this evening, friends, we're in Proverbs chapter 10. And I hope that you read Proverbs chapter 10 this week. I know at least one of you did. And I hope that you familiarized yourself a little bit with the text. And I'm still not entirely sure how I'm going to be handling this whole project of Proverbs. We will find out. I think the Lord will just lead us week by week. I think it might be a little bit tedious to go through, verse by verse all the time. Try a couple of different approaches on different weeks, and there are different things you can do with this book. Each individual proverb on its own has the potential to provide a lot of food for thought, and that's why I feel like if you went verse by verse through a lot of it, you wouldn't be able to give each one the time it deserves, the reflection it deserves, and it's kind of something that has to be done on your own. And if we tried to take two big chunks at a time, it would come at you too fast. You know, you need time to think about these. So anyway, each one can stand on its own. Another thing that you can do is compare several adjacent proverbs, if you take a couple in a row, and try to perceive, is there a progression of thought from one to the next? Sometimes there's a very nice transition between one proverb and the next one, and sometimes these two that are next to each other are completely separate ideas from each other. Sometimes you even get a little cluster, you know, four, five, six in a row, and you find out that, oh, there's a nice little linkage here. Was this planned? Is it random? You know, how did this book get written? How did it get assembled? It seems to me that it's just random, but if you had a jar of marbles, a jar of like 20 different colors of marbles, and you just dumped them out on the ground, you would get some clusters of the same color, you know, just by random chance. You would get some that were the same color stuck together. So I don't know if that's because the Holy Spirit planned it that way, or is it just random? I'm not sure that that's an important question. Same thing you could ask about the Psalms. You know, we have 150 Psalms. Were they put in that exact order for a reason? I'm not so sure. I like the fact that the first psalm is the first one, and the way the book of Psalms ends with that one that they put last, it's a wonderful way to close the book, but I don't know that it had to be that way. Proverbs, the first large section of the Proverbs, there are 374 or 375 Proverbs in what's considered the first collection, and that's chapter 10 through chapter 22, verse 16. If there is an order to them, it's a mystery to me, it's a mystery to anybody else who's ever tried to look at it, and they say it's a futile thing to try to detect an order. Okay, anyway, if you re-scrambled them all up in a different order, I think you would come out with the same wisdom at the end. Okay, so we have what we have. If there is some special insight to be gained by having, you know, these two or three in a row, then so be it. We'll thank God for it. Another thing you can do with the book is go looking for combinations. You know, you can do a topical study. And probably at some point, you know, in the next few weeks, we'll try a few of those topical studies. You know, what do the Proverbs say about breaking your promises, for example? You know, go look for ones that talk to that issue. What do they say about impulse buying? What do they say about spanking your children? Actually, I think there's like 12 proverbs about spanking your children. Sometimes the boundaries between topics are a little bit hazy. You know, a proverb might talk to several different topics at the same time. You know, they're not always very pinpoint precise. You know, this proverb is about this exact topic. So it'd be hard to categorize them. I used to wish that somebody would go through the book and unscramble them all and sort them out so that you could just read, you know, all the ones that have to do with this topic in a row and all the ones that have to do with this topic in a row. And I don't think that way anymore. I feel like it's better this way because wisdom is supposed to, I don't know if it's supposed to be, but it is something that's actually elusive. You know, you have to win it, you have to go on a quest for it. You know, you have to go on a journey and search and do your homework and do some thinking. And it should not be as easy as just looking it up in an encyclopedia and say, you know, have it all there, you know, served up for you like Little Caesars, you know, hot and ready, right? So it should be something that you have to work for. And that's how it is. And that's how the first nine chapters of the book tell you, my son, whatever else you get in life, get wisdom. You know, bend your efforts toward it and go get it. Okay, so they're not in a little directory. Okay, whoever puts forth the effort to go searching for it, that's who gets the payoff, right? That's who get the reward. So for tonight, what I want to do is I want to start in chapter 10, and I just want to take the first 10 Proverbs to get our feet wet, because I want to start talking a few general things about them. So let's start with chapter 10, verse 1. You'll notice a couple of basic observations about how Proverbs are built. Okay, so let's just look at the first one. Most Proverbs are just these two-liners. There's a few that are three-liners, but two little sentences, and each line has two parts. Okay, so four parts in all. There's a subject, and then there's some evaluation of the subject, and then, you know, either positive or negative. And then you go down to the second line, there's another subject, and there's some evaluation of it. And almost always Proverbs are about results, right? They're about the results of the choices that are available to us in life, the results of different paths of conduct, different options. So you usually get paired together one positive and one negative. And sometimes that's called an antithesis, right? Antithesis. Anti means opposite, and thesis means to put things together. So, you know, two things that are opposite set next to each other. You know, choice A is good, choice B is bad, right? It's an antithesis. And if you follow the advice on the first half of the line, you get the positive result that's in the second half of the line. You go down to the second line, and then, you know, there's some negative thing and some negative result. Okay? Sometimes it's not antithetical, it's what they call a synthesis, right? Two lines that are both positive or both negative, right? So the second reinforces the first. But like this one, the first one, it's an antithesis. Wise son, right? A wise son makes a glad father. A foolish son is heaviness to his mother or sorrow to his mother, okay, grief to his mother, all right? You see, there's a desirable result, there's an undesirable result, and they're just laid side by side. Okay, so, you know, the practical outworking of this is, you know, for your own sake, son, for your own happiness' sake, for your own blessedness, and for the people that care about you, preserve your own soul, right? Preserve your own happiness. Make choices in life that are going to rebound to your own peace in life. Okay, it doesn't say a wealthy son makes a glad father. It doesn't say a PhD son makes a glad father. It doesn't say a famous son makes a glad father. Okay, a wealthy son may or may not make a glad father, right? Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But I can tell you this, a wise son makes a glad father, and a foolish son, okay, whether he is as rich or intelligent or famous as you please, if he's a fool, he's going to be an embarrassment to his parents, and to make your parents ashamed and embarrassed is a sad, terrible thing. Okay, now look, I mean, sometimes you have parents that are, the parents have the mixed up priorities, right? Sometimes your parents are ashamed because you did not become a doctor. You know, your parents are ashamed because, you know, you didn't marry a rich girl, or they're ashamed because you didn't make it to the NFL, or they're ashamed because this, that, or the other thing. All right, it means their priorities are wrong. But the advice here is, son, choose wisdom first, right? Wisdom is the principal thing, and wisdom is going to eventually be proved right. So be wise and be patient, and time is going to prove that you chose well, and eventually your parents will come around and they'll be glad. So, you know, make the choice to gain wisdom, okay? But what you see is you have two subjects and then the evaluation of them, they lay them side by side, and you're supposed to, you know, put the pieces together and see, I have options, and this is the one that's being recommended to me. All right, so verse 2. Okay, on the surface, totally unrelated to verse 1, but if you think about it for a little bit, it's a case in point of the first one. Okay, this is something about wisdom. Treasures gained by wickedness, all right, treasures of wickedness. So there's a thing, right? Here's a subject, right? Should I go for this or not? I mean, I like treasure. Don't you like treasure? Okay, and if it's gained by wickedness, well, all right, is this something I should pursue? Treasures gained by wickedness profit nothing, right? It's a negative result. He says they end up not profiting you. But righteousness, second line, here's another thing, delivers from death. Okay, so that's some kind of prophet. Okay, what you see is how they're built. The two concepts presented in the two lines, you're supposed to interpret them in light of each other. Right? You're supposed to draw a parallel between them. Like in the first proverb, in verse 1, everything was a very direct parallel, right? You had father, mother, you had wise, foolish. It's very, you know, it's obvious the correspondence there. Here in this one, it's not so obvious a parallel. You know, what is the first half? Okay, the parallel is not so obvious. You're supposed to make one yourself. Okay, I'm supposed to look, okay, treasures of wickedness do not profit, right? I'm supposed to be thinking about profit. But righteousness, okay, what is the profit? It delivers from death. Okay, those statements actually are not as unrelated as they seem, right? You're supposed to think of the second thing in terms of the first one. What profit is there in righteousness? Oh, there is some profit. You know, so the choice laid before you is, which do you want more, the treasures or to be delivered from death? Okay, because, you know, you often have that choice in life. So what is the choice? That, you know, here's your choice, son. And then I can work it backwards from, you know, from the second line back into the first line. Look at the two lines again. If righteousness delivers from death, I can read that back up into the first line to see that treasures of wickedness will not do that for me. Okay, they will not deliver me from death. Okay, I'm supposed to read these two halves in terms of each other. Okay, can money deliver me from death? No, it doesn't matter how much I have. But, you know, why then would you make it your life's aim to pile this up? Why would you even, you know, some people are even willing to commit sin in order to get it because they think it's going to profit them somehow. But the advice is here is they profit nothing and they cannot deliver you from death. Okay, so you're supposed to read these two, you know, choice A leads to one, choice B leads to two. And I can compare A and 1 and B and 2, or I can compare A and B and 1 and 2, or, you know, A and 2 and B and 1. You know, I'm supposed to, like, take all the four parts of this proverb and sort of, you know, work them around and see how do they fit together in the different ways. You know, I find out this way that righteousness is a type of treasure. It doesn't expressly say that, but because it lays them in parallel next to each other, I find that, you know, righteousness is a kind of treasure. All right, the third one is a little bit different in form. It says this, the Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, or the Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but he casts away the desire of the wicked, or he thwarts the craving of the wicked. This one's different from the other two because it expressly calls on the Lord as the agent. Okay, you could take the Lord out of this proverb and rework it and reword it so that it was in the same form as the other ones. You could read it to say something like this, the righteous man will never famish, but the craving of the wicked will be cast away. You know, you could read it sort of impersonally, you know, without the Lord in it, but this is an Israelite proverb, right? They're all Israelite proverbs, and Israelites, you know, Israelite wisdom tells you it's the Lord who is involved in all of these choices. It's the Lord who repays a man according to his deeds. He is the one who chastises. He is the one who rewards. And so you can see that, you know, you can go plug in the Lord back into the other two that we've read so far, you know, the wise son, the glad father. The Lord is involved in determining the outcomes of this, right? The treasures of wickedness don't profit a man. Well, righteousness delivers from death. The Lord has a hand in that too, right? These are not just... they're not just sort of the, you know, what karma, what they mean by karma. It's just sort of the way the universe works, you know. Things work together to reward the positive things and, you know, punish the negative things. And that's just sort of the way the universe works. But that's not how it is, right? It's not an impersonal mechanistic universe. The Lord is involved, right? The Lord is the one who will take care of you every day. The Lord is the one who doesn't let the righteous man go hungry. It's not just an impersonal universe that we live in, okay? And this is, you know, this is Israelite religion manifested in their wisdom sayings, okay? The Lord thwarts the cravings of the wicked. The Lord will not let the righteous go hungry. You know, there's a verse in James that says, what does it say? You desire, but you cannot have, right? The wicked desires, but cannot have. And James is sometimes called the Proverbs of the New Testament. You find a lot of wisdom in the book of James. You know, you desire, but you can't have. You ask not, or you have not because you ask not, those sort of things. Through the Bible, there is this general principle that the Lord repays a man according to his ways. And you call that, that's called the retribution principle. Okay, you do good, you do good, you get rewarded for it. You do bad, you suffer for it. Some of the wisdom literature deals with the times in life when that doesn't seem, things don't seem to work that way. You know, sometimes the bad get away with their badness and the good do good and they don't get rewarded for it. And a lot of the wisdom literature is you know, deals with that question of you know, why is there sometimes this discrepancy? But in the end, God will prove to be just in his rewards and punishments. You learn that in the wisdom literature. All right, number four says, he who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. Okay, so again, you have a direct parallel. You have A leads to outcome one. You have the opposite of A leads to the opposite outcome, right? Just a direct opposite. Okay, so here is a warning against laziness. It's a warning against idleness, this mindset that refuses to work. Okay, and it's not just procrastination. You know, it says a slack hand, right? This is a person who just doesn't feel like working, doesn't work, doesn't want to do anything, and diligence is the opposite of that. And what the book of Proverbs puts forth, points out virtues, right? Diligence is a virtue. And look to see that there is a reward for this virtue. It's not just diligence makes you a respectable person and laziness makes you irrespectable. It says there is a reward, right? The hand of the diligent makes rich. There's a very practical reward, right? Do you want riches? Be diligent, right? Men are meant to work, right? God did not create us to sit around idle all the time. There's nobody who has an excuse to live their life doing nothing. And it tells you here, if you're in poverty, work your way out of it, okay? Every man is made in the image of God. Every man is made with the dignity of the image of God. He's made to work. But in keeping with what I said last week, you know, it's not in the form of a direct command, you know, thou shalt or thou shalt not. It's sound advice that says, if you choose this, here will be your reward, right? If you choose this, this is going to be the outcome. It's effectively the same as a commandment, right? If I, it doesn't say thou shalt or thou shalt not, but it's like a commandment with a promise, you might say. And, you know, whenever I hear some of the guys on the street say that, you know, they're on disability, I think, you know, how is that an excuse, though, to sit on the curb all day long and actually do nothing? I mean, that does not give you the right to sit and put your hand out and say, can you give money so that I can eat and drink a beer? You know, and I wonder sometimes, you know, what exactly is your disability? You look able-bodied to me. Okay, what excuse is there really to sit in front of the television the entire day or to spend, you know, 6 or 8 hours a day playing games, right? A life is supposed to be productive in some sense. And, you know, I find that even a little old lady who, you know, can't do a job that pays a salary, she still can find lots of ways to make herself useful around the house. Everybody's day is supposed to be filled with activity and some kind of form of earning your bread, earning your keep. And see what it says. The hand of the diligent makes rich. Hey, that's evaluated as a desirable thing. You're able to provide for yourself. You're able to have something to spare. You're living a life that's useful to others. You know, the Bible doesn't say that it's always shameful to have money. Right? If you work for your money and you earn your money, well, then that's something desirable. Okay, he who has a slack hand becomes poor. Look, it's going to happen. You can't just sit around doing nothing and expect other people to feed you all your life and to take care of you all your life. You're going to end up in poverty. And so that leads on to the next proverb very directly. So here you have two in a row, kind of connected by a similar idea. It says, he who gathers in summer is a wise son. and he who sleeps in harvest is the son who causes shame. Okay, causes shame. So shame to himself. And if you glue this back to verse 1 and sort of do the algebra there, you know, a wise son makes a glad father. And here, you know, here's a son who causes shame. You know, he brings shame to his father, shame to his mother, right? If he's just, you understand what it means about in summer, when it's harvest time, when it's time for the crops to come in, you've got to be out there working, okay? You've spent your whole farming season planting, watering, and, you know, now here's the crop, and then you're going to go, you know, sleep and take a nap while the crop is rotting in the field. All your previous work goes for nothing, and when the winter comes, you're not going to have anything, okay? So be out there and work when it's time to work. You know, winter's coming. When it's, you know, when there's nothing to do, then you'll have time to rest and so on. But now is the time to work. And this is the choice in life, right? Will I take my rest now? Or would I rather have, you know, provision for myself in the future? Okay, if I sleep now, I'm going to be hungry later. And, you know, it says he causes shame. So, you know, here's the one son, you know, he goes to sleep. He everybody else is out there working in the field. They're bringing in the corn or whatever it is. And it's all safely brought in. And then, you know, winter time comes and they put the food on the table and, you know, there he is ready to eat with everybody else. And it's like that kid's story, the little red hen, you know, the little red hen story. Okay, she finds the grain of wheat. Who's going to help me plant the wheat? And the pig says, no, not I, right? And the rat says, not I. And the duck says, not I. And who's going to help me water it? Not I, not I. Who's going to help me take it to market? You know, who's going to help me bake the bread, right? Not I, said the pig, not I, right? Who's going to help me eat the bread? I will, you know, all three of them, I will. So that's it. I mean, and so the hen, you know, tough. You know, I did all the work. And you guys went out and played. Okay, it's the same lesson. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. It's wise, all right? It's only sensible. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. Okay, you don't want to have the reputation of an idle person. And the lesson, of course, is, like I said, there's lots of, you could spend all day on this one, you know, there's, the lesson is, teach your children to have a share in the household chores, right? And I think it goes for adults, too, because I think you have some adults who, you know, you have some husbands and so on that sit around and do nothing. But when it's dinner time, there they are, you know, ready to feed their faces, okay? But teach children to work. There's a time for play, there's a time for work. And in the end, laziness is going to bring shame. It takes a lot of work to run a household, doesn't it? You know, you have the laundry, you have the cleaning, you have the bathrooms, you have the dishes, you have all of this stuff, all the inside and outside chores. It takes a lot of work, and every member of the household ought to be pitching in some way. And like I said, that goes for an adult. Look, if you want to eat, you got to work. It's in the New Testament, right? All right, two more, 6 and 7. It says this, blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. That one's kind of tough. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. And the next one, the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. So two in a row here that contrast the righteous with the wicked and the results of their respective ways of living. Okay, not very specific here, just generally terms about righteousness and wickedness. And you can see that both have this antithesis, right? Good choice leads to a good result. Wickedness leads to a bad one. What do the phrases mean? You know, what's blessings on the head? And this is where you run into a difference between English, I think, and the Hebrew language. Hebrew is very, it's very full of imagery. It's very picturesque. You know, an English-speaking person would say, what does that mean? And the Hebrew person would say, you know, what do you mean? What does it mean? It means blessings on your head. You know, don't you get it? It's pretty obvious. You know, it's just, you're supposed to use your imagination. You're supposed to picture this as, you know, blessings upon the head. You know, think about, you know, the Lord pouring out oil, right? He anointeth my head with oil. It's blessings. You know, God is ready to pour out something on your head. The name of the wicked will rot. Okay, it's colorful, right? That's a picturesque, you know, the name of the wicked will rot. You know, people will be glad to be rid of him. His name will be forgotten. It will be pronounced with a spit. you know, with a curse. I don't, you know. Violence covers the mouth. Like I said, sometimes it's just sort of use your imagination, but I think covers the mouth is a Hebrew turn of phrase that means makes a person speechless. And how I've imagined it is, you know, here's the guilty man before the judge and has nothing to say, right? He's ashamed in front of the judge, right? Violence covers the mouth of the wicked. He'll be put to silence or put to shame. You know, like the New Testament says that whoever trusts in the Lord will never be put to shame. You're never going to find yourself in front of the Lord completely humiliated and embarrassed. Okay, the righteous will be remembered. They'll be remembered with fondness. You know, we're having a funeral tomorrow. We're going to remember somebody that we love, a righteous woman. We're going to remember her with fondness and with honor. But it says the name of the wicked will rot. Okay, and I think you can all think of people in your life that you remember with happiness, right? You remember with, you know, what a good man they were, what a good woman they were, and, you know, I'll never forget what they did for me. And then there's other people that, you know, you're glad they're gone. You know, the world is well rid of them. And the name of the wicked will rot. Number eight. This one, like many of them, has to do with teachableness. Okay, teachableness. If you want to learn anything, you have to be submissive, right? You have to be open to receive. And basically this proverb says, look, when it comes time to learn, are you going to listen or are you going to talk? It says, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. Right? Prating means to like run your mouth, right? Babble, to chatter, to prattle on, right? And you'll notice if you look in 10, it's got the same second half, verse 10. Two verses later, second line, it says the same thing. He who winks with the eye causes trouble, but a prating fool will fall. The Proverbs have tons to say about running your mouth. Tons, all right? And you know how some people are, you know, they're just naturally chatterboxes. Other people are very quiet. And, you know, putting in each context, you know, let each individual proverb teach you about the specific situation it might be in. Is it always harmful to be a talkative person? Not necessarily, right? But see the context in each verse. And even though 8 and 10, you know, end with the same line, it doesn't mean they're talking about the same thing. Verse 8 is about whether a person is able to take orders. Okay, or if you have children, you know how it is. They're always making excuses, right? There's some reason why. Okay, but mom, but dad, you know, do you have to talk back? Hopefully, your children don't talk back. It says the wise in heart will receive commands. That could be a parent. It could be a teacher in class. It could be, you know, commanding officer in the military. Of course, God, right, gives commands, and I think this proverb is about insubordination, right? People who talk back instead of listening, right? People who give lip to their boss, right? The boss wants something done, and, you know, instead of that, you talk back to the boss, right? People just won't obey. They've always got some reason not to obey. This doesn't apply to me. Nobody has the right to tell me what to do. You can't tell me to do that. And, you know, when it comes to work, when it comes to working a job and a person is paying you to do an 8 hours a day worth of work, I think he does have the right to tell you what to do, right? You're in a relationship with this person where I'm exchanging money for your work. And so, you know, yes, I do have the right to tell you what to do because I'm paying you to do it. God has that right over his creatures. Can't tell God, you don't have the right to tell me what to do. Parents have that right, okay? And very often the correct answer when you're given a command is yes, sir. And that's it. Just say yes, sir, and do it, instead of talking back and so on and so forth. And I have a stupid illustration about this. It fit. I happened to have my wife and son had the TV on the other night as I was thinking about this, and it was just the right thing. So I don't even know if it's worth your time, but they're watching Gomer Pyle, right? You know Gomer Pyle is the United States Marine Corps. Of course, there's always some shenanigans going on in the show. In the show, he's got somehow managed to get a baby. He's babysitting the baby in the barracks, and the sergeant finds out about it. And of course, he flips out. How can you have that here? We're going to get in trouble. This, that, and the other thing. And, you know, of course, the whole show goes by. They get away with it. until the very last minute. You know, the colonel comes in, the superior officer comes in, and he finds out about it at the last minute, and he's furious with the sergeant. You know, the sergeant didn't, it's not his fault. It's, of course, Gomer Pyle's fault. Everything's Gomer Pyle's fault. Okay, but, and he says, you get in my office at 1400 hours. I'm going to, we're going to talk about this. I'm going to teach you how to run a barracks and so on and so forth. And then all he says, yes, sir. Okay, yes, sir. All right, and it's a comedy show and all of that. But, there's a time for talking back, and there's really not. Right? He could have said, it's not my fault. It's him. The blame's all his, all this and the other. And you get in my office at 1400, yes, sir, that's it. And he catches another guy, says, you were involved in this too? My office, 1400, and yes, sir. And I have thought, okay, it's a parody show, but this is why the military is good for a lot of young guys. Because you learn to toe the line, you learn yes, sir, no, sir. You don't talk back, you don't question your sergeant's orders. The sergeant is also a man under orders. He's got the colonel or whoever is over him. He comes in, he says, you be there, you're there. Yes, sir, that's it. And that teachableness or that submission or, the obedience, zillions of children are growing up these days without knowing, without being taught that, okay? All they know how to do is make sarcastic cracks, make jokes about authority, talk back, make fun of the people who are over them. Look, the proverb says you have a choice in life. Which outcome do you prefer? Okay, so look at verse 8 again. It doesn't state the outcome in the first line. It differs from the structure of the other ones. It just says the wise in heart will receive commands. It doesn't say what he gets by doing that. So you can read back in the consequences from the second line, right? The prating fool will fall. So I calculate, right? And so what is the first half telling me? The one who receives commands is not going to fall. He'll stand. Right? So there's your choice. Are you going to be a wise man or a wise guy? Really, that's about it. Okay? One will cause you to stand. One will cause you to fall. And you can't do the one choice and get the good benefits of the other. Understand what I'm saying? If you pick this choice, this is going to be the result. If you pick this way, this is going to be the result. All right, two more for tonight, and then we'll be done. 9 and 10. It says, he who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known, or he who makes his way crooked will be found out. Okay, become known, he'll be found out, he'll be discovered. And then he who winks with the eye causes trouble, or he's a troublemaker, but a prating fool will fall. So I'm glad I have you two sisters here. This was going to be an illustration from my mom, but I guess you probably heard this one too, Aunt Susan. Your sin will find you out. Do you know anybody who used to say that? Your sin will find you out, right? My mother always told me that her mother would always tell her, your sin will find you out. It's from the Book of Numbers. So now you both heard that growing up. Both of these proverbs are about sneaking around. Okay, doing something behind the backs of others. You see, he who perverts his ways will be found out, right? He'll become known. And then verse 10, he who winks with the eye. That's something, you and me, we have a secret. We know we're going to pull a fast one on these guys, right? We know what's really going on. And so crooked ways, that covers a lot of ground, doesn't it? A lot of things, a lot of sin is done in secret. Adultery is done in secret. Sneaking something out of your mom's pocketbook, that's done in secret. People who are guilty of embezzlement, right? They're good at accounting or whatever. They know how to cook the books and, steal the money on the side. It's obviously it requires secrecy. Looking at sinful stuff on the internet, you don't do that right in front of people, right? You do it, okay, sneaking out of the house at night to meet your boyfriend or to meet your girlfriend. Plagiarizing a paper, cheating, and giving a bribe, right? Framing somebody for a crime. All of this stuff is, it's done on the sly. Well, it says here, he who perverts his ways will become known. So, we have a proverb in English, honesty is the best policy, right? When you walk in integrity, you don't have to make up an alibi. You don't have to make up stories. You don't have to act like somebody that you're not. Okay, people who do things in secret and wink, wink, and we have a plan, they have to make up a story, they have to have excuses, and you got to remember who you told what lie to, And, you know, sometimes you get caught in a lie, you got to make up another lie on top of that one to get away with the first lie. And you ever hear somebody say, we had to do some fast talking to get out of it, right? Policeman pulls you over and you're on my way to the hospital, officer. And he says, oh, that story again. You know, how many times have I heard that one? Okay. He who walks with integrity walks securely. You see it a lot on the news. Politician gets caught in some scandal. He gets caught with his hand in the cookie jar, whatever it was, gets caught with a woman. And there's always some story, right? A prating fool will fall. The New Testament says, it's in 2 Peter. Here in the proverb it says, he who walks with integrity walks securely. In Peter it says, you will never fall. In 2 Peter 1:10, practice these qualities and you will never fall. Be diligent to make your calling and election sure. Right? Diligent, we had earlier, right? It's a quality of a holy man. Be diligent to walk in integrity. Faith, virtue, knowledge, self-control, perseverance, brotherly kindness, love. These are Peter's words. If you walk in integrity, you don't have to make up stories. All right, I don't have to make up a fable to tell you, where was I last night? What did you do with the money? Do you know what happened to, you know, do you know what happened to my wallet? Do you know where my credit card is? Do you know what's going on with these books? Whatever it is, a person who walks in integrity walks securely. I don't have to ever worry about getting caught. Okay, and Peter says, make sure you add all these virtues to your faith and you'll never be ashamed, right? He who trusts in the Lord will never be ashamed. You don't have to do any quick talking in front of God. Okay, so, all right, well, we're done. Just go back, if you will, over these 10. Just go back and review these 10 again and, you know, taste them again and see how they, you know, they sort of combine to make a nice wisdom fruit cocktail. You know, there's different flavors in each one, but when you put them together in a little jar, it tastes good together. You know, it's good. It's a nice variety of different qualities of life, like a variety of flavors. And you can study a single subject, and you know, maybe we can do that in the future. You know, just pick a subject and go through the Proverbs and pull out, you know, 10 or a dozen or something. But when you read them through like this, you kind of get this variety of flavors, and that's what life is, right? There's an art and a science to cooking. There's an art and a science to living. And this is sort of the art of living. Proverbs is about the art of living. Just like you need different colors to paint a painting, you need different kinds of proverbs to walk the way of wisdom. All right, so do what I said. Just look through those 10 again, and then next time we will read a few more. All right? Okay, let's pray. Father, we thank you for our time together tonight, as always. And as my brother Pablo likes to say, and it's a proverb, and I think it's in chapter 10, about the in the multiplicity of words, sin is not lacking. So we pray, Lord, that tonight you would send us home with your peace in our hearts. Help us, Lord, to think about our choices, to think about our priorities in life, and make us useful, diligent, virtuous, honest, all of the things, Lord, that you prize in a man or a woman's character. And I pray that you would use your word to shape us and convict us and teach us the right path to walk in. I pray it in the name of Jesus. Amen.